Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us wherever you are across the state, around the country, around the world at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream too on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Delighted to have our guest here. She is a New York Times bestselling author and the author of the Substack, How Project 2025 Will Ruin Your Life. Andrew Watkins has graciously agreed to stay for another segment because there's just so much to break down about this. Andra, for people who are just joining us, we're talking about the Christian nationalism influence on Project 2025 and things that are kind of embedded within it. You had mentioned, Andra, that you read the whole thing. I spent 2.5 hours one Saturday trying to wade through it, and it's exhausting. It's exhausting because, as you said, it's not written to be an easy, engaging read.
No,
and they front load it with a lot of really boring stuff. The whole first section is what the executive branch should do with each person who works in it. So it's very boring and dry. It really takes getting to Roger Severino's section on Health and Human Services to start finding a lot of their really scary culture war, Christian nationalist rhetoric, very overtly stated. And that's on page 400 and something. So you really have to persevere to find a lot of the really overt stuff in it.
Well, now they want to get rid of the Department of Health and Human Services and turn it into what? The Department of Life.
They want to call it the Department of Life. They also want to transform the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention into a pregnancy and transgender surgery tracking unit. So it wouldn't, they say they want to track abortions, but in order to track abortions, they would have to track all pregnancy outcomes. So they wouldn't just be tracking how many abortions happened. They'd be trying to find out why someone miscarried and if that miscarriage was something that was their fault. And we already see that happening in red states. I mean, Alabama incarcerates more pregnant women for harming their children in the womb than any other state in the country. And they'll incarcerate a woman for taking medicine, for example, and endangering an unborn child. So that kind of thing is already happening in some red states.
And we're talking about women who may need chemotherapy or some other, right?
Right, right. And people deny that under, I can't in good conscience. I have this religious conscience objection to treating this because it's endangering this unborn human being. And so, you know, they're using it to harm women in all kinds of ways, to deny them health care, to incarcerate them for doing things that might endanger their pregnancy. Some busybody thinks that. And so they are incarcerating women. And so they would transform the CDC into that kind of unit. They would also do away in large part with the National Institutes of Health and a lot of the medical research that they do that doesn't just benefit Americans. I mean, that benefits the whole world. But they want all of that privatized. And one of the reasons we have the National Institutes of Health is because it's a government-funded entity and it doesn't have to make a profit. So they can invest in things that may completely go awry because it doesn't matter whether they make a profit or not. So, you know, if they privatize the whole National Institutes of Health, it will absolutely throw a wrench in all of our medical research and medical advances that we've made.
Andrew, something I wanted to, you know, we've been talking about when we, so not as long as you have, of course, but we've been talking about Project 2025 for some time, and we kind of knew that there was something happening here when we saw John Oliver cover it. But one of the things that we really were talking about in detail was the fact that it's also a way to rework the government existing on an executive level so that Trump would be a dear leader, all would come from him. He is the best, the brightest, the only, no experts, only loyalists. And what I'm wondering is, How did the Christian national side of it square that? Because I know that a lot of fans of his, when you look at you, like, well, he's three times divorced, he's done all these things. They say he is a flawed man, and he is, Cyrus. Mm-hmm. How do they square all of that? How do they make, you know, their mission to make it the most godly country through Project 2025 through this broken vessel of Donald Trump?
Well, first of all, I want to say that the Supreme Court's already made it possible for a president to be a dictator. They've mm-hmm. already declared that the president is above the law. So that's an aim of Project 2025. They've paved the way for the president to have all power centered in his office, to fire as many federal servants and civil service as he wants and replace them with loyalists who are sycophants who will do whatever he says, whatever that is. So we already have that happen. And the Supreme Court has made that possible. Joe Biden won't behave that way, but that doesn't mean somebody else who's more nefarious won't behave that way. Now, to answer your question about Trump, I don't talk about him very much. In fact,
you're so lucky.
I call him 45. I can't even stand to say his name.
Yeah.
But he does not deserve our attention. The people behind him do. The people behind him are the people we should be talking a lot more about, because they're really the ones who have dug in and worked for 50 years to get us to this point. The Leonard Leos, for example.
Yes.
He has been working on this for decades. Josh Hawley has been working on this his entire professional life. So we have people who are highly radicalized behind him. He is the empty vessel that they were able to flatter and frill up and make think he's great. You know, he's the best tool for them to gain power. And I've even said if he won in November, then let him probably have his bloody retribution fantasy, because it would get rid of a lot of their enemies and it would help serve their purposes. And then they'd trot out and say, oh, so sad, too bad, our mighty leader died in his sleep last night. And then we'd have J.D. Vance, who's a hardcore Catholic Christian nationalist, as our president, and he could be dictator for 30 or 40 years, because that's really the kind of person they want. But Americans probably aren't going to elect one of them because they don't have the charisma that Trump has for whatever reason. So to me, that's the way they'd accomplish. You know, he's a tool. He's a means to an end.
Yep.
And so they use him for that reason. So we should be talking a lot more about the people behind him.
Andrew Watkins.
And how dangerous they are.
Andrew Watkins is our guest. She is a New York Times bestselling author and also the author of the Substack, How Project 2025 Will Ruin Your Life. We're talking about the Christian nationalist influence on Project 2025. It is woven all throughout it. Andrew in Maine on the live stream has a question. So how come none of these Christian nationalists have adjusted the laws to prevent mixed material fabrics? And that is an interesting circle, square to, you know, how do I circle this square or how do I square this circle? Yeah, we're going to stone adulterers to death because that's in the Old Testament, but we're not going, you can get a tattoo now, even though you're not supposed to if you read Leviticus.
I can eat shrimp.
Yeah, can't do that. I mean, so how do they massage that?
Well, they are very selective in how they read the Bible. So they pick the things that serve their narrative and they ignore the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that someone who's more radicalized wouldn't come along and say, Andrea, you have to get rid of your tattoo that looks like Satan. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not to say that someone wouldn't come along at some point and enforce more of those, well, you can't eat bacon anymore kind of laws that are in the Old Testament. You know, right now, they talk about the ones that serve their narrative and speak to what they're trying to accomplish the most.
Andrew, we mentioned earlier in the show that we have been accused of being hyperbolic, scaremongering, being too afraid because this Project 2025 isn't something that people know about. I got friends who don't know about it, and they're hardcore Trump MAGA Republicans. They don't know about it. All these things trying to paint us as alarm setters. You come from that world, the Christian nationalist world. You, in another life, would have probably voted for Donald Trump with your upbringing. What do you say to people who say that to you, to us, to anyone who wants to bring light to this horrible book, this horrible plan that's going to rework the fabric of this country?
I have on both sides of my family, because I told Jane, my husband's from Milwaukee, so I have family in Wisconsin. And we don't waste time talking to people on that side about anything anymore. Mm. I don't talk to my parents about it. I don't try to convince any Christian nationalists or anybody in the MAGA camp that this is something to take seriously. They're hopeless. So my approach has been to try to persuade persuadable people. So I have libertarian Republicans that understand that this is a recipe for huge, monstrous government intervention in our lives, who don't want this, and they've seen that. And they're reachable. Independent voters are reachable. Lots of Democrat voters have become more energized and more engaged because of reading my Substack and going, this is the worst thing ever, and I need to get more involved to stop this. So that's where I'm focusing my energy and my time. And I don't waste my breath on anyone on the right anymore. If they have not taken one of the many off-ramps that they have been given by now, they're not going to take one. And so I give them up to that.
And it's just interesting, again, as we talked about when we first began, they think that they're going to be immune. They think that, yes, that whatever flavor of Christianity they are, that's going to be okay. That's not going to be okay.
No, they will have a holy war about which flavor is going to be forced on everyone. They get into the same bed now, even though Leonard Leo and Mike Johnson probably hate each other in private. You know, they don't believe the same things about who's going to heaven. And so they're going to have to fight about that after they have power.
Andrew Watkins has been our guest. Thank you so very, very much for taking this much time with us. We would love to have you back before the election.
I'd love to come back. I'd be happy to do it.
We will put all of her links in our show notes after the show is over. Thank you so much, Andra. We will talk to you again very, very soon. Jack
Thank
and
you.
Tom, I see you on the line. We will come back with you. Stay close. This is Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on air. Jay Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us, you can call, you can text. It's the same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. So, such a good conversation with Andrew Watkins.
I mean, we need to have her back on the show.
Absolutely. We'll probably have her back several times. She grew up in a Christian nationalist household and school, and eventually re-educated herself.
Mm-hmm. And that's the story I want to hear, too.
Yeah, like, definitely. And she has taken a look at Project 2025, and the very apparent, if you know what to look for, influence of Christian nationalism on Project 2025. We'll get to our callers in just a second. I do want to address this text that came in. Listening here on WAUK, hi, Jane. I think it's important to distinguish between extreme Christian nationalists and traditional Protestant and Catholic churches that don't believe every biblical word literally and do not take extreme evangelistic actions to force everyone to follow their views. I know young people who don't know the difference between religions and think all Christians are extreme Christians or nationalists. Part of the problem is the decline of moderate Protestant and Catholic churchgoers.
I don't disagree with that
at all. No, I don't either.
But the problem I have is that, and I've had discussions with lay members of the Catholic Church, that while not Christian nationalist, like that flavor that Andra's speaking to, the rhetoric, the inflexibility of it all, is seeping its way in. So it's you have to look quickly. You have to look, you know, what homilies are the priest giving?
Well, and that can vary from church to church.
Exactly. So, of course, they aren't all the same. But the message is starting to get in there. Because also it's a matter that church attendance is dwindling. And this sort of reactionary sort of spirituality is getting attention and brings people in and invites them because, like, oh, they think like I do. I'll go there on Sundays. So I understand what the texter is saying, but there isn't a stark, clear difference anymore.
Well, especially, and I thought it was so interesting when Andrew pointed out that Mike Johnson is very much a evangelical Christian nationalist, whereas Leonard Leo is very much the Opus Dei Catholic, super right Catholic,
yeah,
kind of super Christian.
Yeah.
So those are the two factions that she's talking about that are going to have to fight it out if and when they're able to implement this on what we're all going to have to convert to.
And once again, I am not trying to make a joke of this or make light of this, but when she said something to the effect in the previously about, you know, if you know, they start with one interpretation of the Bible and then start to sprinkle in those no mixed fabrics, no shellfish,
no bacon.
Jane, imagine for a moment what would happen if this country under a theocracy tried, and everyone's like, I love Jesus. This is great. You know, I go to church and I don't mind this. I don't feel like a nationalist, blah, 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 blah. We're getting rid of bacon. People would lose their minds. And that's true. Like, people in this country lose their minds over the littlest things. They think it's threatening their freedom. Anything. We talk about gun control. It's freedom. You know, it's a conversation. But if they tried to ban certain things in this country that we have now fetishized and made like it is America, I don't imagine Americans would handle it well.
But I don't think that's something that they would do coming right out of the gate. As Andra said,
yeah,
you let this go for a couple of years, you get people cowed, you get them controlled, mm-hmm, and then you start adding in these elements. Jack from Merrimack has been waiting a long time. Thank you for your patience, Jack. Tom, we'll get to you next. What did you want to say?
First of all, here's some personality characteristics that the Christian nationalists seem to be interested in. Charismatic speaker, crafty politician, distinct physical appearance, utterly lawless, selfish, ambitious, and an egomaniac, a greedy materialist, controlling, proud, and self-exalting above everything. If you're wondering, I can give you chapter and verse on these. These are descriptions of the Antichrist in the Bible.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if the reason that these Christian nationalists are supporting Trump, because those are definitely characteristics of Trump, and I'm wondering if they're supporting him because they need the Antichrist to come to the for the political arena in America, because that's part of the beginning of their Armageddon.
That's an interesting question, Jack. We are going to have Andra back.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's so much more to cover with her. Thank you. Thank you for that. And Tom, thank you for your patience. What did you want to say?
Absolutely. And I agree with what Andrea said. I don't go after the people that are already, you know, Trumpers or whatever. There's so many people that are sitting on the sidelines that are gettable to vote for Kamala and for Chris Walz. I actually use the word anti-Christian nationalism because I really feel sick that they even use Christ's name in vain like that. So I just try to message it by saying it's anti-Christian nationalism. And then I would also say to people that, you know, Project 2025, people get intimidated because it might be a 900-page document. Go to Wikipedia or go to Google and just look at the summary of it, because it tells you right there in about one page or less than a half page about what this really is. So don't get intimidated by the fact that everyone can say, oh, my God, it's 900 pages, or oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, there's compilations out there, Tom. You're absolutely right. If you just Google Project 2025, there's all kinds of articles about it that will help break it down. And like Tom suggested, thank you, Tom, go to Wikipedia and just look there, mm-hmm, for people who can break it down for you. All right, we don't have a lot of time left, and I really do want to do this before we forget, because we are going to use this clip until Time immemorial. Laura Ingraham.
No. Oh, yes. Sorry. I'm thinking Laura Trump. My apologies.
No, sorry. We're going to back up a little bit. Laura Ingraham.
Yeah.
Last night, talking about Kamala Harris and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and their appearances in Eau Claire and Detroit that seemed to go pretty well. But thank goodness Laura Ingraham, from the network that got fined almost $1 billion for lying to their viewers, she knows Minnesota really, really well. So we should take her word for it. Calvin, let's play that clip.
And these are just facts, Mary Catherine Hamm. I mean, if you know Minnesota, and I don't well, especially Milwaukee, it's changed.
Yes, Laura, you're right. Milwaukee, Minnesota has changed.
Can you play that one more time, Calvin? I don't think I heard that right.
And these are just facts, Mary Catherine Hamm. I mean, if you know Minnesota, and I don't well, especially Milwaukee, it's changed.
Thank you for that, Laura Ingraham. It's just like the good old days when Bill O'Reilly showed footage on his show about the Act 10 protests in Madison that were happening in February. There were palm trees in the background, as Madison is well famous for its capital palm trees.
Hey, here's the upside to it. Tim Walz is our governor now. Can we have Tim Walz and Tony Evers? Co-governors. Oh, my God.
Cope. Cope.
All right.
News is coming up next, and then we're going to lighten things up. J.R. Radcliffe will be here. The Journal Sentinel sports guru. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Mock, the Calvinator on the board, all coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us. You can call. You can text. It's the same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. He joins us every other Thursday at this time to talk all things sports. Journal Sentinel's sports guru, J.R. Radcliffe. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing today?
We're well. You're on the road.
Yeah,
I am. Yeah, a little bit of vacation for myself. I'm down south in Kentucky, but still thinking and talking about Wisconsin sports. So happy to still do this.
Well, appreciate you checking in while you are off, JR. Where do you want to start? The Brewers. Let's start with the Brewers.
They're up 3-0 as we speak in the first inning of today's game. They've already gotten a 3-0 lead, another home run for William Contreras. So this is they're in a good place all of a sudden.
That is what, 10, 18, 21 runs in three games that aren't even completely finished yet in three days. Yes.
Two games in one inning. Yeah.
Yeah.
This feels really, though, like a roller coaster relationship.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm exhausted. Do you love me or not? Are we going out next Friday or what? Do I have to wait by the phone for you to call? Just tell me what's happening.
There are a lot of peaks and valleys in a 162 game season. So that is true. I do still feel like this team is not maybe clicking on all cylinders and hasn't been. And the starting pitching is kind of the biggest thing that I would look at. But the offense does have the possibility. It is capable of doing stuff like this. And Atlanta is really in a tailspin. Granted, the Brewers have had some real struggles lately against teams that are much, much worse than Atlanta. But to go to Atlanta and win the first two games of that series and get out to an early lead in the third is a pretty good accomplishment. They're doing it against some pretty good pitchers, too. You know, Chris Sale, who could win the Cy Young, pitched on, what is yesterday, Wednesday? He pitched Wednesday. And the Brewers got him. And Charlie Morton, who's pitching today, is a very good pitcher. So this is a very good turnaround, specifically for a couple guys. Like Joey Ortiz had a sensational game Wednesday. He's had a sensational series. Like if they can get him going and, you know, they get William Contreras back hitting at a really elite level, you know, suddenly this offense is kind of scary. And they could easily be that scary in the playoffs. It's just a matter of, will they be this way, you know, September 30th and October 1st when these playoff games kick in? That's going to be key for them.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm keep on watching is that because we're enjoying the energy and the winning, and especially from last week and like the last, like, you know, week to 7-10 days. But you also, if you're a Brewers fan, you know that we're kind of keeping the ship together with tape and hope because our pitching just isn't coming together consistently. And
they are.
I mean, how long do you think Freddie Peralta has left?
Well, I hope he has several years left. He's not an old man.
I know, but it's never. We're so thrilled when he has a good night, and we're kind of used to the fact that he can't. It will. Yeah. Ugh.
There's a really big gap between what you see at a game or on screen in terms of what his stuff is. You know, how he's able to generate swings and misses, and how, you know, how effective he looks like he should be versus the results that he's getting.
Yeah.
He doesn't work deep into games. So he has been frustrating, and it's hard to divorce yourself from the idea that, you know, like the Brewers don't have a true number one pitcher. Freddie Peralta is the closest one they've got. And if he's not pitching like an ace, sometimes I think people really, you know, get down on him. And I would be included in that. You know, I feel like he should be better. His results should be better based on what you kind of see him bring to the table. And they're just not. And that's been the case for, you know, not always. It fits and starts, but it's been a rough year for him, I think, overall, in terms of expectations. I still think they're getting healthy with their bullpen guys. There's a chance that they have enough in that arsenal to, if everybody is truly healthy by the end of the year, there's a chance they don't even need their starters to go beyond five innings at all in the playoffs, and maybe even less than that before they can start deploying these bullpen guys. You know, if Brian Hudson gets healthy and Trevor McGill, they have a couple prospects like Jacob Mizorowski, who's really good, Craig Yoho, who's really good. If they bring those guys up, I think they could have enough firepower to offset what they don't have in the starting rotation, which it's not a great rotation. It just isn't great, but they might be able to get by.
All right, I'm going to hope that he calls me on Friday.
Pat Murphy always calls back.
Yeah, right. Let's move on to the Packers, JR. So they had their first preseason game. How do you think that went?
Well, their first preseason game is this weekend, but they did have a family night practice this past, what was it? That was on last Friday, Saturday? All the days are running together already.
Time's a construct, but, JR.
Time is a construct. You know, the highlight of the family night practice was this. I actually got a chance to track this kid down, 11-year-old boy who caught these three punts off the jugs machine. He's from Waupun. Trace Ramirez is his name, and he was able to catch three punts sent into the air by one of the machines that are used to sort of simulate the punt for Packers players. And the whole team came around him and swarmed him, and it was a really great, heartfelt moment. They're, you know, celebrating with him. Got a chance to track him down, talk to his dad, his mom, and that was really cool. But Packers are really healthy. They've got skill and talent at kind of every position. You know, they've sort of been famously, I don't know how many years it goes back, but they've been on a streak of getting at least one undrafted free agent onto their roster every year. You know, somebody that no one thought of just coming out of college, who was just signed kind of off the street, who ends up making the team, surprising people. There's like no chance of that happening this year because they've got so many guys either returning. They've had two really big draft classes. You know, everybody's kind of pulling their weight. There aren't disappointments really in camp right now. So that's really encouraging for a team that I think everybody believes will, you know, make a serious push to win the North, to win the NFC, to go to the Super Bowl. So, I guess there, you could still wonder, is Jordan Love going to be great now that he has a contract, now that the expectations are firmly on him? But there's a lot to like about the Packers this season so far.
And I still think that Jordan Love brings a good vibe. I do. I want to believe that. I just think he's got a more positive vibe than certainly the last couple of years of what's his face.
It definitely feels that way. The only thing that gives me pause is we just don't know any of these guys. And I would have thought the same thing about Rodgers early in his career. Like, it's nice to get a change of pace from Brett Favre. But, you know, there were signs there that aren't here. Yeah, he seems like a much more easygoing, laid-back guy who's you know, got, I think, what a fan, the right amount of, you know, humility and skill and, you know, cooperation, interest in being the best, but also bringing his teammates in on that. So I think it's going to be, you know, I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be a really good season, assuming health, which is a silly thing to assume in the NFL because everyone gets hurt. So we'll see how the chips fall that way.
I just gonna say, I mean, I don't really follow football as much as I probably should. I probably follow it more this season now because we work here and, you know, talk about sports. But you know, the vibe that, as you're saying, Jordan Love just has a good vibe, and also, I mean, he's the fourth, like, starting Packers quarterback in decades. Like, they've had other quarterbacks, but like when you talk about your Don Majkowski, your Brett Favre, your Aaron Rodgers, he's the fourth since like the late 80s. And he is the first to not be thrust in of those, I believe of those, he's the first not to be thrust into the game because of major injury. Because Brett Favre took over for Majkowski because of an injury. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Rodgers did as well for Favre. And because Rodgers left, I might be wrong, by the way, but it just feels like Jordan just has a way different vibe, way different situation walking into this. Plus, also, he's the highest paid quarterback in NFL. Is he the highest paid player in the NFL?
Yeah, but he is. It's going to last for 20 minutes until the next contract gets signed. This is how that works. But yes, for now. And yeah, like Rodgers was kind of given the reins when Brett Favre and the team kind of hit an impasse and they traded him to the Jets. He had previously stepped in for an injured Favre to kind of get a taste of it. And so did Jordan Love in Rodgers. You know, when Rodgers was out with COVID against the Chiefs, that gave Love a chance. He did not fare well, but that was that was a nice little audition for what was to come. And I think like the past year went just kind of as perfectly as it could. He was okay to start with, you know, being the starter, not great, but okay. Kind of took his lumps, but was still hanging in there, and then flipped the switch for the right time of year. And it was this delightful run where, oh man, no one thinks this Packers team is going to be special. They end up being pretty special. They get to the second round of the playoffs. They almost get further. So there's a little disappointment there, but mostly that was all north of, I think, what people expected. You're not going to have that this year. There's no like, oh, we'll just see how it goes. No one is going to say that. Everyone's going to be like, they better win 13 games and go to the NFC Championship game at the very least, and probably a Super Bowl. So it will be a different vibe. You know, I think vibes are good right now. Yeah. It's a young team. They're all growing up together, basically, and they've all had success together. So I think it's a great situation for everybody, but as the season goes on, the screws will tighten because there's going to be some serious expectations.
He joins us every other Thursday at this time, J.R. Radcliffe with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking all things sports. Have you been watching a lot of the Olympics, J.R.?
Oh, I have. I have indeed. I'm very excited about it. I love it. I love the Olympics.
We were talking last week just about the incredible performance of the USA Women's Gymnastics team and Simone Biles and how she was able to come back after so many people dumped on her when she decided to make the decision and during the Tokyo Games to take herself out because she was really afraid she was going to kill herself. So it was really a wonderful vindication, I thought, to see them come back so strongly.
She is such a beautiful soul, or so it seems. Again, we don't know these athletes well, but it's really hard to have followed any Simone Biles coverage and come away with the thought like she's not authentic or genuine or just a deeply compassionate, interesting person. You know, you saw it when they did not win gold on floor. She did not win gold on floor, and the Rebecca Andrade from Brazil did. And you had both Americans on either side of the podium, kind of like, we're not worthy. Andrade accepts her gold. You know, that gives you a sense of kind of the community of gymnastics and sort of the mutual respect they all have. But also, like, Simone Biles doesn't need to win all the golds to be happy, to be satisfied with where she's at. So That has really been great. You know, from a Wisconsin perspective, I've been really paying attention to track and field because of Kenny Bednarik from Rice Lake, who took seventh in the 100, but made the finals, which was good. And he's going to run today as we're speaking, probably in a little less than an hour for the 200. And he took silver in the 200 in Tokyo. He's going to be among the favorites. Noah Lyles, the guy who won the 100, he'll be the favorite. But I really think Kenny's going to give him a run for his money. I'm really, really excited to watch that race. Got to see him race in high school when he was at Rice Lake and just dominating people at the WIAA state meet. So I am really hopeful to see that translate to a gold medal in the Olympics. And even if he walks away with a medal, it'll still be a really, really cool thing.
Absolutely.
And the 200 is his main event. That's his best event.
I've been watching when I can here and there. And I don't know if you watched the Djokovic Alcaraz gold medal match for tennis, men's singles tennis. That was amazing to witness because you had this 21-year-old kid who is already a legend. He's won 4 Grand Slams. He beat Djokovic in in Wimbledon, and Djokovic comes in and beats him in straight sets. Not the easiest straight sets, but beats him. And Djokovic, who has this reputation for being prickly, unlikable, there are articles written about why isn't he a nice person. I don't think he's a not nice person. I just think when he's on the court, he is a he's that specific individual. He was sobbing. He was sobbing on the court. He was so excited because this is his last thing he gets to win, or his last thing he needs to win. He's won all the tournaments, all the Grand Slams, but he's never won gold for Serbia. And this was something where he just turned into a different person. He turned into a mushy Novak Djokovic, and it was so there for him.
We don't have a lot of time left, JR. We got about 2 minutes. How did Giannis, everyone's favorite Greek, how did Giannis do in the Olympics?
I mean, he played great. They played four games, Greece did. He averaged 28 points a game. This is not a full as long as an NBA game, so you kind of have to adjust for inflation, I guess. So he's nearly over 30 points a game. Was outstanding. Was easily their best player, as you might expect. And they made it about as far as I think they could have. They were in a very difficult pool. They went 1-2, had a really nice win against Australia, and then barely the last team to make it into the knockout round on tiebreakers, and then they lost to Germany. But played well against, you know, Spain. Spain's a very good team that didn't even make it out of the pool. That was kind of a good showing, even though Spain won that game. And Canada, the team that, you know, was among the favorites to challenge the U.S., they ended up losing, but that was a really good team too. So Greece had some really tough matchups and did the best they could. But now, yeah, Giannis gets to, you know, presumably rest up and relax a little bit, and then he'll be coming to Milwaukee. Comes through kind of unscathed. I'm sure his Bucks fans are happy to know that he came through unscathed and performed very well.
Absolutely. Well, we will talk to you in a couple of weeks. Enjoy your time off and your time down south, JR. Really appreciate you checking in while you're on vacation.
Absolutely. See you guys soon.
See you in a couple of weeks. All right. News is coming up next. Thank you, Greg and Calvin, and all of our engineers. Without you guys, nothing works. And thank you most of all for calling and listening and for texting. It absolutely means the world.
We're not done.
Oh, that's right. We have another break. I'm leaving. I'm just going to go home. Brittany Merlot is coming up next. What's my name? This is Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm ready to play today. Look at me. Gotta be center field. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, the Calvinator on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us. Call or text, same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Brittany Merlot is here for Weather and Wine, joining us from Wausau. Good morning, lady. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fantastic. How are you?
Good. The weather is great. What, yeah. You want to make fun of me?
No, not at all. I'm loving life and loving you all. Seriously, I'm here for the chill vibes, man.
I just started to say goodbye right before we went into the last break. I thought the show was over. I don't know who I am.
She wants to leave us, Brittany. She wants to be done with us.
Right? She wants the weekend, I'm sure.
Weekend is almost here. It's Friday Eve. It is Friday Eve. So what are we looking at for the weekend? What kind of weather patterns are we seeing across Wisconsin for the weekend and next week?
Quite a cool down, actually. This cold front that's passing through right now is going to give us these crisp, refreshing fall vibe feel. That's what we're headed for. Yeah.
So not a lot of no rain, no nothing like that?
Honestly, no, not really. Just the few scattered showers here this afternoon, still working its way through the state. After that, we clear out. And for tomorrow, the only chances of rain stay way up north off of Lake Superior. So the rest of the state, bright, beautiful, all weekend long. But I will say up north, we are going to be falling to temperatures in the upper 40s for overnights. Yes. And I forecast for some cranberry marshes and stuff like that. And in those marshes, they're going to be dropping to almost near freezing. So they're panicking a little bit as this cold weather moves in.
Wow.
Summer left with a vengeance, apparently.
Wow. You know, and you know what's going to happen is that's going to, you know, they're going to drop down into the 40s. And then the next week it's going to be 97. Yeah. It just feels like whiplash. It's Wisconsin. It's whiplash weather.
Yeah. Yep.
I love that. That's what we are.
Yeah. It's whiplash weather.
Yeah, because I was looking at some 100 degree temperatures, not here, but they're trying to work their way into Missouri and Nebraska next week. So yes, warmer weather is around the corner still.
Wow. And I also, what is forecasting for cranberry bogs like look like? That's just, I never heard that before. Now I'm fascinated.
Oh, they definitely do not want frost. So they're looking out for that cold all the time. And obviously heavy rain gets them and just everyone out there working. They want to know what they're going to be in. So it's hour by hour forecasts like that.
Interesting. Wow. That's really interesting.
Brittany Merlot, most fascinating person at Civic Media.
And I would imagine too, Brittany, that you've been watching Hurricane Debbie as she hit landfall in Florida and now is moving into South Carolina after dumping just extraordinarily amounts of rain.
Too much rain. All that tropical moisture just lifting up north, and it's just got so much juice to work with. I mean, we complain when we get 3 to 4 inches of rainfall all at once, and they're getting double digits.
Yeah.
I can't even fathom what 20 inches of rain would look like.
I can't either.
You know, they've done the National Weather Service, when they have done storm surge animations, and so they'll have the reporter standing next to a light pole or something, you know, a street light pole. And then as it shows the water coming in and what 8 feet of water looks like, it's unbelievable.
It is. And water, it's not the winds. It's not any of that that really does a lot of the damage. It's that storm surge. It's that flood. It's the relentless water mixing with the wastewater and sewage as well. Power outages. It's bad.
Well, and oil and all the other things that are on the ground. And this is how... Yeah, it's flooding is really very, very destructive.
Yes, and I hear that the snakes, too, out there, once it starts flooding, they're everywhere.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad we live here, even though it's, whiplash weather.
I would take this over snakes
I was
any
say,
day.
You never hear, it rained last night, found a bunch of snakes.
Brittany Merlot is our guest, Civic Media meteorologist, and we're doing weather and wine as we do every Thursday. So if people are listening who do want some hotter weather, is it necessarily going to be beachy? Yeah, is it going to be beachy weather next week? Or
if you want to go to the beach for the weekend, I would suggest Sunday is going to be the warmer day where we're going to finally be climbing into the upper 70s. By next week, we'll be flirting with 80 degrees. It's not too big of a warm-up. We're definitely not nearing 90s.
No, and if the humidity isn't awful and hellish, I'll be fine.
Agreed.
Yeah, but this kind of cool with the really low dew points, this is why we live here, I think.
Yes.
This is why we live here.
Can I confess something?
Sure.
When you all talk about dew points like it's, you know, I don't know, 1 + 1, I'm like, yeah, dew points. Am I right? Those dew
those
points.
Things.
More like a don't point, am I right? I don't know what a dew point means. So one of these days, Brittany, you're going to have to take me to quick meteorologist school to teach me the terms and what they mean. Because when
I will.
Yep.
Breaking it down with Brittany.
Oh, I love it.
There we go. But essentially, the dew point is the amount of moisture in the air, isn't it?
In a sense, yes. It's the measurement of the humidity, the moisture, and what it's going to, when you pair it with the temperature, you got to whole different feel like with it. So if you imagine the dry, crisp air, it's really taking that sweat off of your body. It's evaporating it faster. First, when it's so humid, the air around us is too wet. It's not going to take it off our body. So we get hotter faster.
Sounds very sciencey to me.
Just sounds like I sweat a lot. All right, cool.
Basically.
Thank you.
Anything going on in the Wausau area? You didn't happen to make it over to Eau Claire yesterday, did you?
No, I did not. But I heard the traffic was outrageous trying to get there. So I stayed put right here.
Well,
nothing going on here.
We're
going
to wrap it up with words of wisdom from Laura Ingram from Fox Fake News, because she knows, Brittany, Minnesota.
So very well.
Calvin, let's play that clip. I'm going to burn this into the ground.
And these are just facts, Mary Catherine Hamm. I mean, if you know Minnesota, and I don't well, especially Milwaukee, it's changed.
Wait.
Yeah, you heard it right, Brittany. Hey, Calvin, we got time. Play it one more time. You didn't just hallucinate.
You know.
He's got to start.
And these
it
are
over.
Just facts, Mary Catherine Hamm. I mean, if you know Minnesota, and I don't well, especially Milwaukee, it's changed.
Thank you for that, Laura Ingram. I'm going to play this until eternity.
When you die, we're going to bury you in the ground and just have a little speaker
a
and play it on a loop.
Have it on a loop, absolutely.
With a recording of your life.
All right, news is coming up next. Now I can say
we're
the things.
We're done, Jane.
Now I can say the things? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers. Without you guys, nothing works. Thank you. for calling and texting and listening. It means the world. I hope we find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning. Have a great day. Keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Facts, Mary Catherine Hamm. I mean, if you know Minnesota, and I don't well, especially Milwaukee, it's changed.